Australia, Rachel Brunston on Bondi Tunes International.
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around your world, and we welcome our listeners on FM in Australia and New Zealand. I'm Henry in Sydney. In Australia, so is Rachel Brunston. She's our entertainment reporter, and she joins me now from Adelaide in the state of South Australia. Welcome to the show, Rach.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. You okay? Everything good?
Oh, you know, I'm alive and kicking.
Me too.
You can't let a little cancer get in your way.
Yeah.
You know what? I owe you an apology, Rachel.
Why?
Because you interviewed me live on air on the great RTI, Radio Tatras mm-hmm. International, which broadcasts out of Poprad. Postcard from Poprad is the name of the show. And I said I was scared to be interviewed by you more than once.
I thought that was hilarious.
But I felt bad about this because...
Why?
Because I know you're a consummate professional. And by the way, you and I started this show 15 years ago on the 15th of March, which is on this Friday.
And
I, and then Adam.
Yes.
You and I were the first, and that's why I know you're a consummate professional. Although you'd been on radio in Queensland before, of course, and you're an actor. Mm. So I sort of felt bad about that afterwards. But you know what I was actually afraid of? I'm not afraid of cancer. I really am not. But I was afraid of talking about it. And I was kind of nervous. It was live radio with a rather large audience.
Yeah.
And I was sort of thinking, I didn't want to be a poster boy for cancer for a start, which I wasn't. You know,
And
you know, yourself and Eric, you co-host, of course, on Postcard from Poprad on RTI on Fridays. I didn't really know how to articulate my situation without sounding like, oh, it's okay to live with cancer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it didn't come off that way at all. And
I mean,
you being terrified of me, I took it as a major compliment.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And what about the fact that the 15th of March is when we started this show? All those years ago, 15 years ago.
So much has happened.
I know.
Yet it seems like a minute ago. And I know that's a very cliche thing to say.
That's just true.
But I remember it very vividly. And you said, I think we're going to do let's talk and record it. It wasn't even a thing. It was because if I recall correctly, it was a mixed show then anyway.
Mm.
And you still were doing music and other things.
Yes, I originally did a 1-hour music show for a station called Replay Radio in the UK, mm-hmm. which no longer exists. But, you know, as I said on air, I got the idea from RTI, Eric with another bloke, just another bloke, okay?
Yep.
We're chatting and I said, crikey, if they can do it, so could I. So mm-hmm. I got on to you and really Bondi Tunes International as a chat show started because I was, and remember in those days Skype, yeah, that was okay and doable. But
yes.
When I heard Eric and the other guy, I thought, why don't we do that? And that's where it started.
And it was a great idea because here we are 15 years later and of course, it's a great idea everywhere because I'm still doing Poprad.
Indeed.
So, and I've been doing that for, 12 years now.
Yeah.
Because I was with you for a few years first. And of course, that's where you learn your craft with Henry. And then you move off to, you know, let others have the spoils of war, et cetera. But I remember when we were talking, because you said, let's just talk about something.
Mm.
And I went, okay, and we started, and it happened to be flooding in Queensland, which is not unusual.
And you were living in Caloundra.
I was, but it was my first flood, and it was really interesting, and we were talking about how Anna Bligh handled the whole situation, and so we're going back a while, and
she was the premier
of Queensland, yeah.
Mm. Mm.
And now I think she runs the NAB or something, but...
They always do. They always end up in these plum jobs, even though they're crap politicians.
They're rubbish, yeah.
I don't know if she was good or not, to be honest.
She was actually pretty good.
Was she good? Yeah.
Yeah, she was pretty good. But I just remember thinking, this isn't even like, and it's to this day. I forget, sorry, everybody listening. I forget you're listening. because it's like I'm just having a chat with my friends.
Yes.
That's all it is.
And that's all it's ever been. And often we talk about what we call nothing, you, me and Adam.
We do, and we're so good at nothing.
And you know, you are our entertainment reporter, but you're so much more than that. But it's kind of rare that we get to talk about entertainment. But of course, the Academy Awards have just recently come on our airwaves.
Yes.
I was excited, Rach, because as I was saying to you off air, I've become legal and I actually, you know, watch movies legally. So I got to see all three of the big players this year was Barbie, Oppenheimer and Poor Things. And look, I want to talk about Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt's speech
You.
But first of all, I would just like our listeners to take a listen to Barbie and Oppenheimer stars Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt took to the stage at the 96th Annual Academy Awards to celebrate the stunt community in Hollywood. Take a listen to this.
Hello, Emily.
Wow. Bit of a frosty hello.
Not at all. No, I'm just happy that we can finally put this Barbenheimer rivalry behind us.
That's right. That's right. Here's Ken and Kitty. Just leaving all that fodder in the dust,
exactly.
Guys, right? And the way this award season's turned out wasn't that much of a rivalry, so just let it go. So
it's true. You guys are doing very well, you know? Congratulations.
Thanks.
But you know, I think I kind of figured out why they call it Barbenheimer and they didn't call it Oppen Barbie.
Why?
Well, I think you guys are at the tail end of that because you were riding Barbie's coattails all summer.
Thanks for Ken-splaining that to me. All right, mister, I need to paint my abs on to get nominated. You don't see Robert Downey
kidding.
Doing that.
You're kidding.
Robert
You're
Downey
kidding.
Did not paint his abs on to
this
get
This is
nominated.
Insane, Emily. This has got to stop. We have to squash this.
We're here to celebrate the stunt community.
Massively, yes.
Weren't they great, Rach?
They were so good. And it was a real thing. It was, but I didn't know. I knew there was the Barbenheimer thing was going on, but I didn't know it was a rivalry. I thought it was just an amalgamation of the two things that were taking the most money at the time.
Right.
I didn't know that there was a rivalry, but when those two came, and those two are like top draw anyway at what they do,
of course, yeah.
They were so good. And so many times when you watch these award shows, the actors or presenters or whoever they are, they have been given script to read. And if it's poorly written or if they're just not comfortable, it always comes off as contrived. But these two were at it, and it was so good. It was so good. It was one of my favourite moments of the night.
And it was one of my favourite Oscars in a long time. And, of course,
me too.
The pandemic caused a bit of havoc with the Oscars. And, by the way, just as a sideline, do you know why it's called the Oscars? Because, in fact, no one really knows, Rachel.
Isn't there an... well, I should know. I mean, I know
but,
why...
But
the
no
Tony
one actually knows.
But I don't... I don't... I think there's several theories, but
there
I don't
is,
think
yes.
there's ever any concrete evidence. I don't know whether, you know, did somebody get one and nickname it?
Yeah, actually, I'll just quote from our good friends at Wikipedia. No one is quite sure exactly when or why the Academy Award of Merit began to be known as the Oscar. One popular theory, according to the Academy Awards, is that Margaret Herrick, former Academy librarian in the 1930s and 40s, thought that the statuette looked like her uncle Oscar. After hearing that, Academy staff started referring to the award as Oscar. How about that?
I like that. I love that. Let's say that's it.
Yeah, let's say that's it. Okay. Now let's talk about it. Let's talk
yes.
about the Oscars. Give us a rundown on, you know, I know, I think you watched it in real time.
I did. I watched it in real time on one of the free-to-air networks. Streaming services, which was weird to do, but it was at least it was live. We normally get it quite delayed and there's spoilers, and
yeah.
you know, so it was nice to watch it live, and being able to do it on what's on free-to-air was really interesting.
Yes, on Channel 7 it was, yeah.
Yeah, and it was public holiday here yesterday.
So I was wondering how you got to do that, right?
Yeah, it was. I didn't have to work, so it was nice. I just sort of sat back with Gordy and watched the whole proceedings. But I haven't enjoyed the last couple of Oscars, and I think mostly because everything got turned sour for me with the whole Will Smith business. But also, I haven't really enjoyed any of the movies. I didn't have a vested interest in any of the particular actors. I didn't know any of the movies. So I was sort of a bit off it. But this year, I'd actually seen several, was big fans of several, and big fans of some of the people who won too. So I was excited about it. I wanted to see, you know, certain people, you know, winning, and you knew they were going to, and I wanted to see, you know, silliness take place, it was a bit of everything. There was a bit of sort of poignancy, and there was silly, and there was serious, and it was an all-rounded good show. And Jimmy Kimmel did a really good job hosting, but he's a solid host.
And he was very good. His, what do they call it, an opener or whatever they call it?
His monologue.
He was very good. I love that man.
Me too.
Best picture. You know, we're not. You know, this is all already aired, so no spoilers here.
No spoilers, guys.
Oppenheimer won, and that was predicted, wasn't it?
But so it should. You know, what a tremendous tour de force it was, and in particular, it's interesting to me that I didn't know this, but Christopher Nolan, who directed that film, and his wife produced it, and they're a force, and they've been working with Cillian Murphy for 20 years. I didn't know that. Oh. I didn't know they had a history with him.
And he has a history, you know, locally in Europe. He's an incredibly good actor, and he was in some Irish movies, or, you know, funded by the Irish government when he was very young. You know, but you're right. He had a relationship with you know, these guys going back a long time, and a lot of people don't know this. You know?
Yeah, I didn't have a clue that they knew each other or had worked together before. But, you know, as an Australian who's not privy to certain things, I wouldn't know that. But yeah, I mean, and by the way, every time he speaks, Cillian Murphy, I hear you. That's all I hear. I tell you, it's not the Irish thing either, because you don't have a super strong Irish accent,
no,
and neither
I don't.
Does he.
No.
It's very broad, but also it's just, I swear to God, everybody, find Cillian Murphy speaking in his regular accent, not as Oppenheimer, and shut your eyes, and it could be Bondi Tunes International, because it's the cadence, it's the rhythm of it as well. And I swear to
How
God.
How interesting.
I shut my eyes and it's you.
It's funny because he's actually from the second largest city in Ireland, called Cork. And there, I mean, I don't understand their accent. Those accents are so strong, and his simply isn't, you know.
I think he does what a lot of, you know, Americans tend to do as well, if they're from, like, from the South, for example. Julia Roberts is famous for it. She had a very strong Southern accent and got dialected out of it
I like that.
And a lot of, you know, people from New York were the same, or, you know, particularly strong New York, like New Jersey, like Queens. So I think maybe he's been dialected, not out of it, but he's, you know, made a smart choice as an actor to be able to get work.
Yes. You know, it's interesting about accents. I'm obsessed with accents. Thomas Booker is from San Antonio de Bayard in Texas, and he doesn't have a Texas accent at all. And I said, how? Why? Because he's lived there all his life. And he says, I choose not to, because he's the only liberal in a very Republican state of Texas. So he just said, I chose not to have it. So there you go.
It's funny, isn't it? Because Jim Parsons from The Big Bang Theory, he's from Texas and hasn't got the slightest tilt to him at all. Isn't that interesting? You either make a choice, or you are dialected out of it, that you can't do it anymore, or, you know, whatever the reason. But Cillian Murphy, when I shut my eyes, it's you.
I'll take that as a massive compliment, or, Rachel Brunson.
When it's you talking to me, I think it's Cillian Murphy.
All right, so, okay, so it works both ways.
Yeah.
And of course, for Best Picture, Barbie was up there. A lot of the movies I don't really know, America, that I haven't seen, obviously.
Yes.
American Fiction, not Anatomy of a Fall. I have no idea about these other films. But Barbie was up there, but Oppenheimer got it, but Barbie got its own back, didn't it?
It sure did. It so did. It got its very own back, thanks to Ryan Gosling. But also, Oppenheimer and Barbie, you couldn't get two more different
movies. I know.
You couldn't get two more. But you know what? I enjoyed them as much as each other. And I was just not all about Barbie. I thought, no, Margot Robbie, what have you done? What are you doing? There wasn't much sort of... There was a lot of noise about it, but there wasn't much about what it was going to be. And what it turned out to be was a thing that made you actually think things and feel things. And, you know, it was a very poignant film and very well done. And
but very, Ryan very Gosling, smart. Very smart.
Ryan Gosling's just epic.
God.
He's so good, isn't he? But in that movie, he is sublime, and he's just so good. And I didn't know. I mean, I knew he could sing because of La La Land, but I didn't.
Of course, La La Land.
He was a rocker, and then I sort of did a bit of research, as is your thing to do, and I found out he is has a band, and they've got an album coming out. And
really?
I'm like, okay, so he's legit. Like he's
the real deal.
When he jumps up on stage in his pink outfit, and then Slash turns up, and you know what's going on. It was so good. He was great.
Yeah, Margot Robbie. I just want to talk about her for a minute. She's from a small town about 150 k's away from the capital city of Queensland, Brisbane. And she put a lot of, you know, I've often talked now on air about the risk factor here. Margot Robbie took a big risk. She put millions of dollars into Barbie, and it's something that could have gone so terribly wrong, Rachel, because what they had to do was, it obviously would be appealing to children, but it's a well-known thing in the industry, the film industry, as you know, that they try and make it interesting to the parents as well.
Well, that's right, because they pay for the tickets.
But it was a risk for her, because she did pour millions into it, and she's going to make many, many, many millions out of it.
She's very smart. She makes very smart choices, because she made the choice to do I, Tonya several years ago.
I remember that, yeah.
And she was nominated for Academy Award for it, and I believe, if memory serves, so I'm going back into my brain archive, but Alison Janney, who played her mother, won the Oscar that year. And it was a risky movie. It was a little independent movie. She, one of her first things that she ever produced, and what a way to go. Like, straight away, Oscar buzz. She was nominated. The film was nominated. They got a win out of it. But when you think, Barbie, what was she? Where did this come from? Because you think Margot Robbie, and you know that she is, you know, blonde, and she is very beautiful.
She is.
But you also know that she's got a depth to her that she's unfathomable as a talent.
Yeah.
So what's she gonna do with this?
I have not. The person who was narrating this, and please help me if you can, she's a famous English actor.
Helen Mirren.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the in-house joke when Barbie, traditional Barbie or whatever she calls, stereotypical Barbie says,
"Yes,
I'm not beautiful." And what is that?
She says, I should know. I've
something
a
like.
Times. She says something like, just a note to the filmmakers, Margot Robbie was the wrong casting choice to make this point.
That is so close to what she actually said. And I love in-house jokes in movies. And that was just a beautiful thing.
I'm not pretty anymore.
What? You're so pretty.
I'm not stereotypical Barbie. Pretty.
Note to the filmmakers, Margot Robbie is the wrong person to cast if you want to make this point.
I wanted to talk about Paul Giamatti. I hope I've
pronounced
this.
What an
incredibly, now he's in the holdovers, what an incredible actor he is. He didn't
he's
get...
He's amazing.
And he didn't, obviously he lost to Cillian Murphy as best actor. But wow, is he talented or what?
He's tremendous, and I know that he has won before. I know that he's won before, but I forget for what, and I'm fairly confident.
Wasn't it something to do with wine? Wine movie?
Well, I forget if it was that one or a movie that Russell Crowe was in with him. Mm. I should just look. You know what? I've got my iPad in front of me. We'll talk about him in the meantime anyway. But yes, yeah. Alexander Payne. Mm-hmm. And people might remember Alexander Payne for a movie called The Descendants that George Clooney did a few years ago.
I loved that film.
He also, and Paul Giamatti, he was also directed him in a movie called Sideways.
I didn't know he directed. That's interesting.
Yes, he writes and directs.
Now, Sideways, what's Sideways? Is that the
Sideways
one about
was the wine movie.
The wine movie. I love that too.
Yeah. And Paul Giamatti is a, you know, obviously has a lovely relationship with Alexander Payne. He's, he's Cinderella Man. That's the one he earned a nomination for. That's thinking of. Yes. That's with the, and he also got nominated. When did he win it? I'm sure he won something. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, no, it's interesting. By the way, if you just joined us, I'm talking with our entertainment reporter, Rachel Brunsdon, in South Australia, and we're talking about the recent Academy Awards. We have to talk about Robert Downey Jr., Rachel.
Oh my gosh. I've been such a fan of his for the longest time. I think the very first time I ever saw him in a movie was in, and you know, it was interesting in his speech how he started naming people.
Yes.
And you know that he's naming guys from movies he was in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And has clearly remained close to, for example, James Spader, for example,
yes,
Anthony Michael Hall, famously from The Breakfast Club. Mm-hmm. But I remember seeing him for the very first time in a James Spader movie, which he would be very hard to find these days, although with the internet probably not, called Tough Turf.
Mm-hmm.
It was a terrible film.
Okay.
They were both brilliant in it. And I remember him, and I remember thinking, who is that guy? And I think I was like 13 when I saw it. So I've been and of course, Weird Science, which he was in with Anthony Michael Hall, is one of my favorite all-time 80s movies.
Right? Yeah.
But I remember being just a huge fan of this guy, huge fan. And when he went on his tilt downwards and ended up in jail for a while, and I thought, please, 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 please don't let this be the end of your story. Please, please don't let this, because I'm a massive fan. And I love everything Marvel, as you know. So for me, the whole Iron Man Avengers thing is just, you know, beyond. But I loved Ally McBeal. I loved him in Ally McBeal. I've loved him.
I don't even remember. He was in Ally McBeal?
And fired from Ally McBeal. Because
that would be the early 90s, of course.
He accidentally found the phone number of his old cocaine dealer. But what I enjoyed the most about his speech is he's so self-effacing, but what I enjoyed about his speech was the fact that he thanked his lawyer.
Yes, yes, I know. You know, I'm going to get back to him in a second. I just want to play an audio grab of Robert Downey Jr. Doing his acceptance speech as Best Supporting Actor. Oscar for Oppenheimer, take a listen.
I'd like to thank my terrible childhood and the Academy in that order. I'd like to thank my wife, Susan Downey over there. She found me a snarling rescue pet and you love me back to life. That's why I'm here. Thank you. Here's my little secret. I needed this job more than it needed me. Chris knew it. Emma made sure that she surrounded me with one of the great casts and crews of all time, Emily, Killian, Matt Damon, Blunt. It was fantastic, and I stand here before you a better man because of it. You know, what we do is meaningful, and the stuff that we decide to make is important. So back to my publicist. My agent, Philip Raskin, is here, and Andrew Dunlap, my den mother, Joy Feely, thank you very much. I'm going to thank my stylist in case no one else does. Thanks. Erica, thank you very much. And I'm just going to say this. My entertainment lawyer, Tom Hansen, of 40 years, the half of which he spent trying to get me insured and bailing me out of the hooscow. Thanks, bro. Avery Exton Indio, this one's for you.
Yeah, you know what? He was very honest in his speech, wasn't he?
And very much. And if you watch them, like, and if you're obsessed with awards seasons like I am, he's won every single thing there is to win. He didn't lose. He was nominated for everything, and he won everything, and rightly so for that performance in that film.
He's never won an Oscar before, has he? I mean,
no, he's been nominated twice.
Yeah. Okay.
Three times now, and one time he should have won for Chaplin, but that was.
Oh, Chaplin was a fantastic movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, he should have won for that, but he clearly got bested that day. But the thing about him is that you knew he was going to win it, like you just knew it. He'd won everything else. There was no way he wasn't going to win. There was no way. Mm. So when he got up, he knew he was going to win it too. He just got up.
Do you reckon?
Yes. And he got on
the stage. He's up against Robert De Niro, for goodness sake. Robert De Niro.
I know. But, you know, it's a thing where they also are recognising. I've heard this about the Oscars. You are campaigning for, and your publicist, and that's why they forbade the thanking of publicists in speeches. The reason why they did that is because your publicist is the one who launches the, in air quotes, for your consideration campaigns in all these awards. Mm-hmm. So it'll be studio driven and a publicist driven. So the studio will say, we want these Oscars because it does good business for us. Publicists say, well, we want our clients because this does good business for us. Mm-hmm. And the actor will just say, hey, whoever wants to shoot for the moon, shoot for the moon, because I'll stand up and accept one if you want to hand one to me. But but I've heard about the Oscars that it's not, they don't just think about the person in terms of that performance. It's almost for a body of work.
Mm.
And you get, it's like with Leo DiCaprio's Oscar a couple of years ago, because he's missed out so many times. And it was almost like, it's your turn now.
Is it kind of a sense of fairness that goes on?
I think so.
And who are the people? You know, the Golden Globes apparently are notorious for the kind of people who are involved in making decisions. A lot of people in the film industry who have nefarious sort of reasons to push movies, and I don't know if all that's true, but not so with the Oscars, I think. But it's interesting that they do take all that stuff you just mentioned into account, Rach.
Mm, I think they do, and it's like Jimmy Kimmel, when he made the quip about Greta Gerwig not getting nominated for Best Director for Barbie, and that was considered a huge snub. And of course, that you got to remember that the people in that room are Academy members, as he pointed out. He said, you're the got ones who didn't vote for us, so don't think it's not about you.
Yes.
Never mind your applause. So he called them out, and I thought that was very cool. But I think there's a lot more, it's like the BAFTAs, there's a lot more gravitas considered with the Oscars. It's the ultimate thing. It's more... it's more considered. It's more serious. That's why I think that the range of what they look at is also intensely huge. Like, they won't just look at the last, you know, three things that came out on Netflix. They'll look at, you know, every single thing and the way it's performed and who crafted it and who wrote. It comes from a huge pool, and then they whittle it down to these, you know, several nominees. So. I think
a lot of thought put into it, yeah.
A lot of consideration. And
yeah.
I think that's really interesting, because I think some of these sort of tend to be a little bit flip. You know, critic's choice, who cares? I mean, it's considered to be one of the award shows that's important. But who cares?
What's interesting to me is the international flavour of this year's Academy Awards. Mm-hmm. they really did go international this year. And I'm wondering why that is. And now we all know, not just, you know, because of the pandemic, that the Academy Awards are getting less and less viewers.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, because of all this social media and YouTube and everything else. They're getting less and less live viewers, but mm-hmm. and some critic I read somewhere said they've gone international for partly that reason, that they, you know, and this is interesting because you could be forgiven for thinking that they were America-centric, Rachel. What are
very
your thoughts?
Much. Even though they have, you know, actors from other countries playing in their American movies, this year two of the Best Picture nominees were foreign language films.
Which is interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, and one of the actresses, Sandra. Oh my gosh, her last name's escaping me. She was nominated for Best Actress in.
Not Sandra Bullock, no.
No.
okay. Sandra Oh? No.
No. Hang on, we'll find the right one. I just stood up away from my iPad, so now I have to unlock it again. Well, but she was in both of these foreign language movies.
Mm.
She was in both of them.
Yeah, it's interesting how they have gone so international in this. And I just want to talk about Best Actress in a Supporting Role. Divine Joy Randolph now won Best Supporting Actress for The Holdovers, which I have not seen.
That's the Paul Giamatti movie.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Mm-hmm. And she was up against Jodie Foster, which is quite a powerful force. But it's all about the movie. I mean, Jodie Foster in Naiad, I think, is what that's called.
Yes. It is all about the movie. It is all about the movie. And that's what it should be about, the performance. But in actual fact, it never is. Having said that, this year, it's all about the movie, I think, about the performance, because Emily Blunt was nominated all through this season and never won for Oppenheimer. And Lily Gladstone, and this was my only bugbear about this whole night. Well, there was a couple, but this is my big one. Lily Gladstone, the first Native American woman ever to be nominated for Academy Award in that category, in Best Actress category, she'd won a bunch of stuff. And I'm sure you watched it. The very moment they named Emma Stone as the winner.
I saw it, yes.
Emma Stone didn't even stand up. She didn't know what was going on.
Came down. I mean, it was nuts.
It did. And what's now upsetting about it is that Lily Gladstone, in her loss, was so gracious. And as a human being, you would be. But the press have gone all savage and said undeserved win, should have gone to Lily Gladstone. The Academy had an opportunity to make history and didn't, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, hang on a minute, isn't this all very reductive to Emma Stone? Like, she is a very good actress.
She's very good, yeah.
Clearly very good in this role. You've seen it, I haven't. But she also has a tremendous body of work.
And just to explain, and I'm not doing any spoilers here, but, you know, she's playing a girl who has the brain of a one-year-old child, and that's as far as I'll go with that. But she is brilliant in her physical movements, everything in this film. I would strongly encourage anyone to watch that film. It's just quite amazing. Poor Things, it's called. And you know, I want to just talk about Best Directing, because we mentioned Christopher Nolan.
Sandra Fuller is her name.
Oh, thank you.
No worries.
I love the way you can multitask like that, Rachel. You're a woman after all. We were talking about Christopher Nolan, which, of course, he won his first ever Oscar for directing Oppenheimer. And, of course, he was up against, you know, Martin Scorsese. Come on. Again, it's about the movie.
It's about the movie.
And I'd like to say, I think Yorgos Lanthimos is a newcomer, and he was a director of Poor Things, and he was in this for Best Directing, but he Christopher Nolan won. Is this a game changer for for a director who I've never heard of before?
For Yorgos?
No, sorry, I meant Christopher Nolan.
Oh, don't you know him? Oh my
no,
gosh.
I don't. You mentioned that he's been around for a long time, but
he directed a bunch of the, or maybe not a bunch, but certainly he was the director on Heath Ledger's Batman.
Oh, okay.
He is the guy who had to go and accept Heath Ledger's Golden Globe, his posthumous Golden Globe. You YouTube, actually, if you YouTube Christopher Nolan Golden Globe Heath Ledger, you'll see his acceptance speech. And then when he won his own Golden Globe, he said, "The last time I was standing here was 10 years ago, whenever it was, accepting for our dear friend Heath Ledger." He said, "And I remember feeling tremendous responsibility about that, but I looked up and saw Robert Downey Jr. looking at me with love and support as he is looking at me right now," because they were all at the Oppenheimer table together, of course. But it's a very, very tremendously sad moment, but very beautifully handled by him. But he's a tremendous director. He's Google him and find out what movies he's done, and then get a look at his movies. His movies are brilliant.
Okay, now, Rachel, explain to me about screenplays, because it is a category at the Academy Awards, Best Adapted Screenplay. What is a screenplay like? Is it a play is it a movie made out of a play? How does this work?
Okay, so a screenplay is basically what you would call a script. But the screenplay itself is the actual story. So the story is either original or it's adapted from something else, either a play, a poem, a song, usually a book. 99% of the time it's a book. So that's where you're getting the two different categories from. So, for example, Maestro, which is actually one I have seen and is very good, Bradley Cooper, another one who has never got his Oscar yet but will do, he wrote that himself, directed it himself, produced it himself, starred in it himself. That was an original. The adapted stuff is like Oppenheimer was adapted from a book. So that's the difference between the two.
Interesting, because I never did know that. Of course, American Fiction was the winner of Best Adapted Screenplay. Poor Things was in there. The Zone of Interest, which I have no idea what that movie was. And, of course, Barbie and Oppenheimer.
The Zone of Interest is the other foreign film that Sandra Ulla was in.
Oh, I see.
Okay. And it is about a German family that live in a very nice house that share a fence with Auschwitz. And it's very, very rich, clearly dark, but really interesting-looking film. I have seen bits and pieces of it, but not the whole thing. So that's where that came from. But Barbie adapted, although the screenplay itself was original, it's from an adapted thing. It's adapted from something that already exists. So Barbie already exists. Mattel have got their brand all over that movie.
You know, isn't that funny, Rach? I had to laugh.
Will Ferrell.
Yes, I mean, you love him, I know. You just have to laugh the way how do you pronounce that anyway?
Mattel,
You know, unceremoniously decided to give themselves a massive plug, and they deserved it anyway, you know what I mean?
They 100% did, and you know what? It's interesting because I think when they would have poured a ton of money into that movie, and they would have had meetings with Mattel saying, "We want to do this," because they would have to. It's trademarked property.
Yes.
But Mattel knew it was a great idea because Barbie in recent years has taken a dive. Nobody's interested in Barbie anymore.
Barbie dolls, now, as in the real Barbie dolls or the pretend. Yeah. Right. And has it taken a dive? Don't they have Barbies that are like transsexual?
They have all kinds of Barbies now. You can get any kind of Barbie you want. I think I bought one for Beth not long ago.
Your daughter, yes.
Yeah, because I knew that it was something that she would, and I'm not, I should maybe shouldn't tell you this on air because somebody will take offense to it. But
go on. Go on. Right. It wouldn't be the first time in our 15 years on air.
Please, disclaimer, not picking on any handicapped people. I'm not. But I bought, because it was, the way it was done was amusing. I bought prosthetic Barbie.
There is a thing?
There is a thing. Wow. And you pop her leg off. And, you know, and that's, I'm not taking anything away from people with prosthesis, but the way it was done was like, what's the point? You can pull a whole leg off anyway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can actually take her leg off. Why did you do this?
Like, this is, look, I'm totally with you on this because I love dark humor and I'm all for that. You know, it's almost like almost politically correct that they have a Barbie doll like that.
Of course. But Barbie's taken a bit of a hit.
Not anymore.
she went a bit out of style. And what Margot Robbie has done is essentially saved Mattel. So,
how interesting.
And it's like, I was Googling it because I got all curious. You know, when you just go, well, I'm going to Google some things now. On eBay, it's not even out yet. This doll hasn't yet hit the market. But Weird Barbie, played so brilliantly by Kate McKinnon from Saturday Night Live fame.
Oh, yes.
She's just a genius. I love everything she does. She plays Weird Barbie, and Weird Barbie, to buy the doll of Weird Barbie, it's not on the shelves yet, and it's already $400 on eBay.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. OMG.
So they've saved Mattel, and they've re-energized Barbie. They've got girls back more interested in Barbie again. Mm. You know, I was even thinking maybe I should buy Barbie, not with all its legs, but
yeah, all its legs, all three of them. I want to talk about a movie that really didn't get talked about. Now, a friend of mine actually messaged me on Signal, which is the cool version of WhatsApp, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, "Have you seen Napoleon?" And I said, "No." Have you? And I'm guessing you haven't seen it either.
No, and I know Robbie and I've been waiting for an opportunity to see it because he loves his history. Loves his history movies and loves history documentaries, loves history movies, everything about history he loves, which is how we ended up in a city like Washington, D.C. But he wants to see Napoleon, and we've been trying to get to the cinema to see it and haven't been able to, so we're waiting for whatever streaming services it pops up on. But the thing, while I'm talking about that, by the way,
sure.
Netflix took one Oscar last night.
Really?
They were nominated for 30.
Well, what happened? What happened? You know what? I always say that, like, Apple, what do they call them? Apple Movies or Amazon Prime. You know, Netflix was the first to do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And the other guys, who are much bigger than Netflix ever was, you know, people like Apple, they thought, well, if they're doing it, we can do it, but we can do it bigger. And I always thought that Netflix was going down the tubes in recent years. And maybe I'm right. What do you
could
think?
Could well be. And I think also there's been a resurgence of filmmakers deciding they want to make films for cinema again. They want to do that kind of filmmaking. When you film for, you know, a streaming service like that, you can almost do it like television. And technically speaking, there's different gear involved. But at the end of the day, the thing people are responding to most, I find, on the streaming services are their limited and ongoing series. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to get into the Oscars race anyway, but they were nominated. Apple was nominated last night, took nothing.
Is that right? Netflix
took nothing. It was all studios last night. It was studios were back.
And that's a good thing, isn't it?
It's a very good thing. Mm. Yes, I know that companies like Apple and Netflix employ a lot of people, but the film industry is sacrosanct and it is something that should never go away. And given the fact that last year they were shut down, the whole place was shut down for 140-something days with a writer's strike and an actor's strike, it's become very, very much the going to the movies in your – it's like going on a plane, right? People used to dress up to go on planes.
Yes, back in the 50s and 60s. Yeah.
Now they're barely wearing clothing. They're mostly wearing their pajamas already. Mm. And the same can be said for the movies. We used to dress up a little bit to go to the movies.
Absolutely.
And the theatre. And then for a while we started going in our jeans and our, you know, sneakers and whatever. Now, if you're wearing $500 jeans and $800 sneakers, I've got no problem with you.
But I think you're making an analogy here with regard to respect for the art form, yeah?
Very much. And people are going back. And the reason why they're going back to the movies is because we got it all taken away not long ago.
Yeah.
And people remember. They wanted that experience. They want the giant screen. We've got big screens in our homes, but not like you could, for example, you can get on, I think, Netflix or Amazon Prime, one of the two. I've got them all. And watch Top Gun Maverick, which I would highly recommend that you do because I think you'll love it. Oh. But I saw that on the big screen first because I didn't – it's one of those movies that you have to see it.
And you can't beat the sound quality and everything, no matter what you put in your lounge room. You and can't beat it.
I want to be – feel like I'm being ripped off buying an $800 Coke and a popcorn. I want that experience.
It's part of the experience.
It's whole part of the experience. Yes, you must. Yes. It's like going to Disneyland and trying to buy a churro, which costs you $18 US. I can't. I had to do it. It's got to be. It's part of it. It's part of the whole. But you know, you get you put your lipstick on, and you don't have to get really fluffed up because you are in the dark. But you know, you put your maybe you have a little dinner before. It's a nice. You know, it's a it's a great date night.
It's a great reason to get out, you know.
It's a great reason to get out, and you don't have to do it as if you've just come from, you know, the soccer practice that you pick your kid up from or whatever. But you know, it's an occasion. It's an occasion. So I'm interested. It was interesting to me because a few years ago it was all about streaming services winning everything, but streaming services had found a way to still work. While the pandemic was on, and to produce things very, very quickly and in a machine that is a Netflix. But you have to be careful when you're doing it with a studio, and it takes certain sensibilities, and it takes certain – you have to get a certain amount of people and the right amount of people and the right kinds of people and the specifically skilled people that you need to make it all work. So, I mean, you know, viva la cinema, I say.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we're going a bit over time here, but I don't care.
Me neither.
Hello, everybody. This is Henry for Bondi Tunes International. You're listening to our two-hour weekly chat show. But hey, we also have a music show called Love is on the Air, where I invite you to join me for an hour of love songs spanning five decades. It airs on this station, so check the schedule for Love is on the Air. Oh, my date has arrived. I'll see you soon.
Love is on the air from Bondi Tunes International.
Bondi Tunes International, playing all over the planet now.
And if you've just joined us, I'm talking with our entertainment reporter Rachel Brunson in South Australia. I'm Henry in Sydney on this continent of Australia. I just want to quickly mention Napoleon again because I think it's been totally underrated. I haven't seen the film, but I've heard great things about it. I didn't get a big look in at this year's Academy Awards, which is what we're talking about. And I'm intrigued that it didn't. I can never pronounce this guy's name.
Joaquin.
Thank you, Phoenix. Now, he was a child actor, wasn't he, Rach?
Sure was, brother of River Phoenix.
And didn't he die?
Yes, he did. He died in 1992 or 93. I was in Japan at the time. I know that for sure.
Wow.
Maybe 93. Yeah, he died same time. It's around the same time as Kurt Cobain did. So,
that's right.
He was a tremendous talent. His brother was coming up. And he kept coming up, but he won an Oscar, you know, a couple of years ago, but he's always had a little bit of trouble because
what did he win the Oscar for? What did he
won for?
She's gonna have to Google this.
Google it now because
while you're doing that, I just want to mention
that was the Joker, actually.
Oh yes, I remember that very well. That was a full-on movie, part of the Batman kind of series, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, it was. Joaquin Phoenix won. He was in Gladiator with Russell Crowe.
Oh yes.
So we know that for sure. But he won for. For the Joker, yeah.
Okay, it was the Joker. Now Ridley Scott, you know, according to the British online news site, The Guardian. Ridley Scott dispenses with the symbolic weight attached to previous biopics in favour of a spectacle with a great star at its centre. And as I keep saying, I feel like this, maybe it was because it was released quite late. And of course,
I think that would be it. And also, I mean, Ridley Scott and Joaquin Phoenix have a relationship because Ridley Scott directed Gladiator. They already know each other very, very well. But I mean, you do, you miss your window, and they don't, and sometimes they don't tend to push as hard for it. I mean, some productions, they just don't push. It didn't get a lot of buzz at the time. I think it sort of missed its window. I think it's not eligible next year because it was already nominated for something this year. It was nominated for production design, I'm pretty sure, but lost to Poor Things probably. It missed its window, and no actors at all were given a nod in any way. So I don't know that they pushed very hard, because you would give a nomination to a former winner for
with these Academy Awards, of course, everyone's switched on for the big players, best actor, best supporting actor, actress, supporting actor, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But of course, they have to go out of their way, not out of their way, because you shouldn't have to go out of your way to talk about things like best documentary short film, best film editing, the people who aren't famous. I just wonder, traditionally at the Oscars, they would do the big numbers at the end, like best actor, best film, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But are they changing, Rachel, in the sense that what I think they should do is put best film editing like second from the top, kind of thing? You know what I'm saying?
They tend to. They start. The very, very first award is always traditionally best supporting actress.
Mm.
And they still do that. Best supporting actor comes a bit later. But in between, they start doing things like
animation.
Documentary animation. Did you notice who won the Oscar for Best Animated Short this year?
No, I did not. Who did?
It was a movie called War Is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko.
Oh, really?
Yes. And guess who accepted that award?
Oh, please do tell.
Sean Ono Lennon.
Wow, the son of John Lennon.
Mm-hmm. He was a maker of that film.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing, isn't it?
It's a wonderful thing, and, so good. The guy who won Best Animated Feature, whoever won Best Animated Feature didn't even turn up.
Is it because he didn't think he'd win it?
I think they didn't think they were going to win against Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, but, you did win, and you should have come.
yes, I agree.
But the other ones that were particularly interesting to me were the documentary films. The Last Repair Shop won the Best Documentary Short Film, and that is about public school instrument repair for music programs.
Right.
Which, of course, my dad being my dad, is really interesting to me. But the best documentary feature film, and you'll remember this speech, 20 Days in Mariupol.
Yes.
Such a good speech. And the thing that got ruined about that was that the idiot who was running that orchestra did a very poor job, by the way, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But as he was walking off, he played I'm Just Ken.
Oh.
Yeah. Hello, tone deaf?
Yeah.
This man has just made a very beautiful, poignant, moving speech about the situation in Ukraine, and you have played I'm Just Ken? No. You've got that wrong, and that was a massive mistake. There was also holes in what they did where there should have been music. There wasn't any. A few presenters walked out. They should have been played on. They weren't. There was the end of the whole night when everybody from Oppenheimer's standing there hugging each other. Jimmy Kimmel's saying goodnight. There's no music. Which is what do we do now? It's a cue to everybody. It's a sign. You're actors and you're walking out to present something. You need to be played on. I don't know who the drunk guy was running that orchestra, but he needs to be sacked.
Yeah, no, that's not good. I want to mention The Color Purple, because, of course, we know about The Color Purple from the 1980s movie with Brain Fog.
Oprah.
Oprah Winfrey, of course,
and Whoopi Goldberg,
and Whoopi, and they you know, they've recreated this, and just according to The Guardian again, The Color Purple Review, a heartfelt new version of Supercharged by a powerhouse cast, and of course it was Steven Spielberg who did the 1985 adaptation. They say it's been softened, but the evocative energy of this movie, which I have not seen, three female leads, is magical. Do you have a problem with people remaking films, Rach?
I don't in this case, and the only reason
Have you seen it?
No, but I don't in this case, but the reason why I don't is because this movie isn't a remake of the old movie. This movie is based on the play.
How interesting. Okay.
So this movie is not just a flat-out remake, like what they've done with, for inexplicable reasons, Mean Girls.
Oh, dear, yes. Yeah.
But this is actually an adaptation of the play.
So was the other one not?
It was an adaptation of the book.
Oh, I see. See, we were talking about this earlier on, you know.
The movie, the book became the movie, became the play, became the movie.
Right. Now, I'm going to watch this.
Yeah, you should.
I love period dramas anyway, but I particularly liked The Color Purple back in the day, and now I'm absolutely going to watch this as soon as I can find it on some streaming service.
I think the only other blunder of the evening was that of the great Al Pacino.
Oh, yes, please do tell.
Well, he came out to announce Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't read out any nominees and just sort of said Oppenheimer in a German accent and hardly anybody caught it.
Jesus.
And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, they won. What's interesting about that, though, and he's now saying in the press that nobody told him to read the nominees. They just well, there's 10 of them. there was 10 of them, so, you know, whatever. But... But they showed snippets of them through the whole proceedings, as they do. But the interesting thing about this is that the year that there was the big stuff up with who won Best Picture between La La Land and Moonlight, that had happened seconds after Emma Stone won her Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
The envelope for that, for her La La Land win, got somehow handed to Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty.
I remember, yes. What so a faux pas.
when she left the stage after accepting her Oscar, and which she did beautifully, by the way, and her dress busted on her.
Yes, I saw that.
Jimmy Kimmel said, as he called off and he said, somebody rip that card up so it can't be reread. And
Wow.
And it was funny because then, of course, Al Pacino comes out and gaffs it and nobody's bloody sure either. So it's
what a mess.
Like, every time Emma Stone wins, whoever's next, get your job right.
Yeah. It's, okay. Well, you've been really honest about this because, you know, a lot of people would, you know, you're naturally a film critic and you are an entertainment reporter and you notice these things, but a lot of people probably wouldn't, but they should. I think they should.
They should.
Rach, we've been so naughty, you and I. We've gone way over time.
We don't care.
But we just don't, do we? It's always a pleasure to have you here on Bondi Tunes. Thank you so much for joining me again.
You are very welcome. Happy to come back whenever you like.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio. Okay, and we're out. That was a lot of fun.
I just don't know who I am without you.
You're 10.
But it's Barbie. And Ken. There is no just Ken.
Doesn't seem to matter what I do. I'm always number two. No one knows how hard I tried. I have feelings that I can't explain. They're driving me insane. All my life been so polite. Cause I'm just Ken. Anywhere else I'd be a 10. Is it my destiny to live and die a life of blonde fragility? I'm just Ken. Where I see love, she sees a friend. What will it take for her to see?
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.